For January 9th, 2026, we talk about Ball X Pit, Carnival Massacre, Dead Island 2, and much more. Welcome to Level 5-7. My name is Kane Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back in the new year, everybody. Everybody here on the call. I would wait for everybody else to respond, but that would take a while.
I thought we
Send
would
in
all
your response.
I thought
the
about
worst
cheering
play by post.
Thought about cheering for the new year, but then backstage we all lamented that the year's already kind of shit. So
yeah.
Shrug.
Yeah, no, we're here. the facts remain, and so do we.
It brings us joy to be together, regardless of the relative position that joy is starting from.
Right. Mm. Yes. So how was people's break? Moxie, how about you? What you up to? What'd you get into?
Pretty good. I mostly took it easy. Watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Boy, Joan of Arc, huh?
Yes.
Yep, the lead singer from the Bengals. Yeah, I had a crush on her so much when I was little.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. That literally was my primary takeaway from the movie.
Yes,
but yeah. no, actually, in general, was impressed. I need to look into its the backstory of how it's made, because like the acting and production and stuff like that is way above like what appears to be a like near zero budget stoner movie.
Yeah, like for it's a screwball stoner comedy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's
some might say it is the screwball stoner comedy.
Well, it's one of them.
I find it funny. So in so doing this, I found out that like stoner comedy is like a thing. Sorry, the listeners can't see doing air quotes. And like there are whole contingents of like, apparently there are people who very much feel it is not a stoner comedy because it never specifically mentions anyone using weed.
Yeah, no, something can very spiritually be a stoner comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also like, what do you think makes people talk like that?
Like, yeah. Like it's a stereotype on them. Yeah, no, that's a, yeah, stuff can be not a, yeah, that is a silly requirement to me.
I always liken it to like a black light that you shine on things and you're like, oh, something was there that it totally didn't see. And it's like, if you watch something on an edible, you're like, oh, this is really funny. I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, it's a residue. Also like the stoner comedy conception of what smoking weed is like is not actually what it's like. Yeah. So like it is already like a heightened like facsimile of the thing. So
yes. Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Is this porn for weed? I don't understand.
Yeah. I don't know.
The other really fun thing, just hung out with some friends for the New Year's Eve. However, one of them, she last year, like beginning of last year, got the King Arthur Flower cookbook that's just like tons of entire cookbook of baking recipes. And over the course of the year, she's made every recipe in it.
Okay.
And made the final recipe for New Year's Eve.
Oh,
wow.
So that was that's cool. Awesome. It was, I forget the name. It was this cake that's named after like the saint, patron saint of baking.
Okay.
But yeah, it was some like,
Saint Pillsbury?
Saint Honoré.
Yeah, and so it's like like real fancy confectionery that's, you know, you're supposed to eat on his feast day.
Huh. So. Camelotkas is the best I have.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not fast enough. I'm way too tired for that. That's impressive. That's 450 foolproof King Arthur recipes.
Yeah, and some of them were pretty insane. I think the craziest I've heard is apparently the traditional way to make pretzels that she's done.
Oh, you have to use lye. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd like dip them in lye so that the outside like melts, and that's why it's like shiny and smooth and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah,
that's horrifying.
And then give them to your enemies, or
no. It's, there's something about the process that ends up making it safe. It's just never safe to handle lye.
Right.
The final product is safe, but yeah, that is one of the ways that that pretzels naturally get that taste to them. Yeah.
Naturally doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence, but yeah.
Lie exists in nature.
See, what you're tasting there is all the little bits of skin that get melted off the hands of the people making it. That's what really gives it its character.
Gives it a patina. By which I mean that skin came from a woman named Pat and a woman named Tina.
All right, she's back up to speed. We're good.
It's fun. Ben, how about you? Good. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, what about the rest of you?
Yeah, Ben, how about you?
Pretty good. Went back to Ohio to hang out with family. Third time I took my partner to the Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia area. So,
okay.
Less nervous about doing that now compared to last year, but it was a good time. We did a Hot Ones Challenge, is a tradition that we do with our family. I defended my title. So 2 years in a row, we got to the last dab this time. So it was getting pretty spicy. We put the bomb rightfully after that in level of heat. So, nobody tried that one, thankfully.
Is that just a infamously hot, hot sauce?
Yeah. If you watch the show, it's been on since the beginning and it's always in the 8 out of 10 spot, but it is far worse than any of the other hot sauces. So they use it as their climax and then we'll have falling action after that.
That's wise. That is wise.
Yeah. Christmas was a good time. Happy to be back home. Trying to think. Oh, yeah. I think I decided in the new year I'm going to try and do a half marathon at the Flying Pig in Cincinnati.
Oh, sweet.
Anyone,
hey.
Anyone wants to, looking at Dennis.
Support you? Absolutely. I will be there to cheer you on.
All right. Fair enough. So I started training for that. And I think I've only done 3 runs. But it seems good so far. So,
yeah.
Wait, did you say the full or the half?
Doing the half, just the half.
Okay. I asked that question as if it would change my answer, but
yeah.
I can commit to cheering 5K of that if it's a walking pace.
Yeah.
I feel like if I was ever going to run a marathon, what I would really need is for you to like every say 4 water stops or so be there with a THC seltzer.
Oh man,
that might just to keep the euphoria going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something
with your endorphins.
If I'm gonna make that dumb of a decision, I need to make sure I stay committed to the dumb decision.
Man, your mouth would be really dry.
Somewhat related to that. The only half I ever did was in Portland, and they had like the 21st mile beer hill, I think is what they called it, where it's like 3 miles before the end, there's a hill you have to go up, and it's not too bad. But then at the top, there's people with a bunch of like, kind of like, was it like Coors and like Budweiser type beers or whatever, passing them out if anybody wants to just like slam one since they're close enough to the end.
But, I mean, drinking water is important.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I genuinely enjoy me a Coors Light.
You know,
I'm proud
on a summer day. Yeah, no, I'm generally not too proud for any beer. You know, if that's what's there, if that's what your host offers you, you accept it.
No, I'm generally the same way. I'm a little upset that like a bunch of those a bunch specifically of that segment of the market like pulled out of their like pride sponsorships and stuff.
Yeah, that is a
bummer. Oh yes, there is that. Yeah. Well, and to follow your point, Moxie, you know, basically a Coors Light sounds good anytime a refreshing glass of water would sound good. So
yeah, everything has a purpose.
It's far in front of that. It's just, yeah.
Everything has its purpose. No. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. I can't remember how extensively I talked about it on air before, but one of my Christmas presents to the kids was kind of turning the music area of our basement into a little mini recording studio.
Yes. Yeah. We've talked about this.
Yes. Okay. So, that has then just dominated, in the best possible way, like dominated every second of Christmas forward. As you know, they've messed around, I've messed around, you know, everybody's playing around and doing stuff. I'll have to share some of the little things they've come up with. But that has just been hella fun. So fought through the frustration of getting everything wired up properly.
Yep.
And yeah, fought through the frankly vertical learning curve on Pro Tools.
Oh yeah. Pro Tools is a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very powerful program, but if you think you are going to be making any sound within the first hour of opening it, you are a fool.
That is a lot of car. That is a lot of car.
But I feel like, you know, I got over that hump just in time for Christmas and have been able to just enjoy it with the kids. Mm-hmm. And what's really fun is they've started now. So, you know, they're in voice lessons and an instrument each, you know, Luke's in drums, Miles on piano, and they'll have me bounce, you know, whatever they're working on before they go into lessons and then play it for their teachers to like talk about what they want to do with it. And so now their music lessons has kind of turned into a little like, I don't know, songwriting stuff. And of course the teachers are eating it up because it's candy for them as well.
Oh yeah. Well, it's first as extracurricular proof that the kids are practicing, but also like, you know, which I imagine sometimes gets demoralizing for a music teacher, but also like, oh yeah, it becomes like if music becomes an ongoing project as opposed to something that you do that just exists when you're in a performance space. Suddenly details start mattering an awful lot, and like messing around and experimenting with stuff starts mattering a lot more. And that's like the fun parts of music.
Oh, so fun. Well, and it's funny, particularly with Luke's drum teacher. I've started to feel bad that he and I now, or, you know, he's like, you know, giving me ideas or whatever on one of the things they did. They wanted like a whip crack sample just because they realized they could drop samples in and every funny sound they could think of got put in the mix. And we were talking about how like, well, if you want to do that on a MIDI trigger, how do you get the whoosh in front of it when you, you know, the trigger is, you need to have the crack and you split it up and then you can, you know, you start and stop triggers and time it out. And it's like, and then Luke's like, we're 10 minutes into my lesson time. Should I be drumming? all that conversation happens after lessons, but it has been so much fun. So, holidays were just really fun in general. Hosting, being with family. So I'm coming into 2026, macro world events inside, just on or macro world events aside, just on cloud nine. So a holiday well spent.
Wonderful. Yeah. For me, the like Christmas was good in general, you know, like just usual family stuff. Nothing, you know, obviously things are, you know, a little different, but like still had good quality time with family, which was nice. But yeah, I had like 5 days of just like relaxing and just kind of like doing things at my own pace. But then it was end of year for the business stuff and then also moving stuff, you know?
No.
So like just at a full sprint for the past like 10 days right now so far.
Christmas was the eye of the storm.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, the less people have to hear like details about that, the better, because ultimately it's just, oh, I have too much stuff because I don't throw it away. Like getting so tired with that and so like focused on other things that like I generally like when I'm away from recording for long enough, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get back. I get antsy. I want to be on the microphone, but like especially just be like, okay, I can sit down and record and just goof around. And like that, like this is the closest that I get to relaxing right now.
You're not allowed to be working on moving if you're actively talking to us.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to hear about how family members didn't get one battle after another. You know what I'm saying?
What's there not to get? It's a really straightforward movie.
I haven't followed up on the texts I've received about that in case it wasn't clear that that was very personal.
What? Okay. Is it a stoner movie? Yeah,
maybe. Haven't watched the stone yet.
You have to find
but,
out.
But I mean, the main character spends most of it stoned.
It's true.
Takeaway
is to watch Battle of Algiers stoned, I think.
Yes, that I think is the way to get the authentic experience. Cool. Well, I think we should talk about games. And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about things we've been playing over the last period of time or so. Who has something new?
I actually do.
Okay, good.
I picked up on Steam sale for like $5, Dead Island 2.
I thought you already played that.
No, I've played Dead Island 1, Dying Light 1, and Dying Light 2. I've not played Dead Island 2.
Okay. Follow up. I thought you hated Dead Island.
I have a complicated relationship with this series.
Okay.
Look, hate and love aren't opposites. They're actually very close to each other.
Right. The opposite of love is not hated, is apathy.
Right. The original game, Dead Island, kind of the source of my hate is that, just to, you know, for people who haven't been listening to this podcast for like 10 years, basically it's a game that is very silly, but wants to be a super, super serious zombie movie. Okay. And with that, it very bad, not badly, it handles in a way that doesn't land a one of the characters getting sexually assaulted. Then, like, in the last 5 minutes of the game, kills off like that character, and then basically has an ending that makes absolutely no sense because unless you've read the novelization of the game.
I fucking hate when games do that. That's awful.
That's a whole other thing, but this is a game that somewhat improves on some of the edgelord-ness of the previous games. Both one because the previous games like to like imply that all of your characters just die at the end, and this canonically makes it like, no, they show up, that sort of thing. But also because as a new writing team that seems to realize that like having fun is a good thing.
It was a completely different studio.
Yeah.
Actually several completely different studios. It was a famously troubled development.
Yeah. And I will say it's very interesting to play this game, both knowing that and because it's a game that has some really good ideas, but you know, comes together to be kind of an average game. But like, there are some cool things. So, for example, I like they've got like four classes of weapons, each of which, every weapon's one of these four classes, and that determines how critical hits work. So it's like either critical hits happen when you get headshots, happen when you get limb shots, or happen when you attack really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Are the different weapon types, is it between like guns and melee, the four different types, or?
No, this would more be like between like knives versus sledgehammers versus clubs, say.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that, you know, so that does a lot to, you know, do it, especially since this is a game where your weapons have very low durability. So it's really fun being in the middle of a big fight and like you know, say you're going for headshots and then your weapon breaks and you switch to a different weapon, it's like, oh, I need to now, you know, target my enemy's legs or whatever.
You need to sweep the leg?
Yes, yes. You must sweep the leg. If a man, if a zombie can't stand, he can't fight. But yeah, and then other than that, just some really fun characters. I'm playing as a kind of a rockabilly, like roller derby lady. There's one of the characters' concepts I like is your team has like a firefighter on it. You know, that like he's, you know, one of these guys, except it's explicitly like he's there because, oh yeah, I'm a firefighter, except that it turns out that he's actually a stripper that was doing like a firefight themed striptease when the zombie apocalypse happened.
Amazing.
Awesome. Okay, that's pretty funny.
I also like there's a character that's a Paralympic athlete that has a amputated leg. Oh. And that's one just cool representation, but I also like it because it's just like her thing is like, oh yeah, the bus is the reason I'm here is the bus is broke down, but I just decided to run the, you know, 10 miles between there and here.
Yeah.
So just kind of fun being like, oh yeah, I guess that would kind of be a superpower in the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But yeah, yeah. Overall, though, I think my biggest takeaway is it's really interesting seeing the divergent evolution between this and Dying Light, because, you know, Dead Island 1 and Dying Light were made by the same people, and in a lot of ways, they are very much the same game. But whereas one has kind of, you know, doubled down on the survival mechanics and the parkour, the other just, you know, very much leans into the actual combat and smashiness. And so, yeah, it's just, it's kind of cool seeing, you know, this, you know, thing where a single game or almost a single game has kind of diverged into two separate games.
It's always interesting when that happens, right? I'm going to say words that are going to make you claw at the ear in front of you, like you're trying to get out of a casket. Like after the Stanley Parable, when the, when like Davey Reedon went and did, yep, no, I was right. Davey Reedon did the Beginner's Guide, and then the other guy, I forget his name because his name wasn't all over the follow-up, like went and did like a bunch of like ultimately stuff that I think would become like High on Life. But just to see like from a common starting point, kind of the different expressions of the ideas. Yeah.
When it's a team splitting like that, also it's very interesting because it's like, all right, which one of you was actually talented?
Yeah.
It's just like one side happened to have like all of the heart and the other side had all of the jokes.
Yeah.
Was the thing. It was actually a very clear separation in that case.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
It's the old Neo Tokyo thing.
Yeah. So my complaint with the first Dead Island, and this was like 16 years ago I played it. No, this was 14 years ago because it came out in 2011. Was that for as much as the combat was melee, right? So you're swinging stuff. You know, you would think that it would be like, you know, physics based. So if I'm doing a swing, I'm gonna hit like the first thing that is gonna you know come in contact with, or I'm gonna hit a bunch of things if it's heavy. And Dead Island 1, it's just whatever your cursor happens to be on, and it's like just completely like this was a post Dead Island or this was a post Dead Rising world where like physics based zombie combat, like we discovered it was really fun, and to have it just be like, no, you have to individually click on every zombie that you want to die. Did they fix that?
Yes, they have. I'm hesitating. Yes, they have. I'm hesitating because I played a ton of Vermintide. So like, I really like first person melee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying to figure out exactly the specifics of how they implemented their system, because mm-hmm. there's a couple different ways games do that. I haven't figured that out. One thing I find, I doubt this is, maybe it was a direct thing, but something I have found that's funny is they've almost overcompensated in that I've had times where I'm doing a swing and accidentally hit explosive barrel behind me.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a little silly.
Yeah, it's never been one where it's just like, oh, this is clearly the game screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of that comes down to this is a game with very arcadey physics.
Mm-hmm.
But
just from a usability standpoint, it seems like it'd be nice if you couldn't hit anything, something that wasn't in your field of view.
Yes.
Yeah.
That also, what is in that barrel that hitting it with a baseball bat causes it to explode?
So nitroglycerin.
I guess.
Yeah. I will say that is the other thing they've actually added to this is a big focus on environmental damage. So you'll find jerry cans full of oil. And you can just equip them and just lay down pools of oil and then light them.
Okay.
Divinity approach to combat.
Yeah. Which is also cool because it makes the ability to throw your weapon and it makes it so that any of the zombie style a flaming weapon or electrified weapon, that now becomes a utility. That's a way to to trigger these traps. And in particular, any of the weapons in the game, if you right click, your character will then, ready to throw. Mm-hmm. And having, seeing a can of oil on the ground and just winging your weapon at it and killing all the zombies is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah. So that's all I've really got. So I'll pass on to the next person.
Yeah. Ben, when I asked you had something new, you kind of did.
I got a couple things to talk about. I'm throttling my releases of games, I think, because I don't want to burn too much cast, I guess.
Okay.
It's like Stephen King always having a novel in the hopper or whatever.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. It has several. Yeah.
So there's two games that I played that are new, at least new to me, that I thought were thematically similar. So I wanted to bring them up together. The first one I played before break because I wanted to play a roguelike, and it's called Slots and Daggers. A Steam game. It is a $10 game type thing. I just figured I'd try it on a lurk. And so it's something that I think I've seen kind of increasing in popularity on Steam, which is it's a slot machine kind of mechanic to it.
Yeah. I think
Clovers and Pit is another one that's out. Yeah, I haven't tried that one.
Yeah, there's Clover Pit. There are a couple of roguelike slot machine games as well.
Yeah. Like The Landlord.
Yeah, Landlord is one of those. Yeah, a few people are, I think, post Buckshot Roulette, taking a bite at the other gambling expressed as horror kind of genre. Yeah.
Yeah. So with this one, you literally have a slot machine. Everything's very kind of tactile in a sense where it looks like this, it looks like a Michel Gondry steampunk type aesthetic to it, if that makes sense, where it's you're playing on this machine that has reels. And then the environment that you're in is this kind of picturesque, relief painting at the top of this steel machine. And then as you're spinning stuff, you're doing this Slay the Spire, attack defense sort of thing. But instead of choosing a card and playing it, it's basically whatever comes up on the reels is what you get. So at the start of every run, you pick three different symbols. Typically the symbols are some type of attack that has a lot of different flavors, some sort of defense and some sort of money making mechanic. And then the money you use to buy new symbols to add to the reels that you have.
So that's you're building your deck.
Yeah. You're kind of building out what the options are on each of the reels. And then that progresses from there, and you can try and do some like sort of synergies or combos there, where it's like you can start off, they have like different classes that they kind of try and go for, where it's like there's like a dagger that'll cause bleeding, and then there's other things where it's like this will do more damage if they're already bleeding. The long and short of it is I only played this for a couple hours and it became a little samey and I beat it pretty quickly. So it's one of those ones where it's like, after playing it, it's like, well, it's a good idea or a good basis for a game, but it kind of needs to go back in the hopper a little bit for like design wise. Namely because towards the end game, there's a symbol where it's like, if you get this, you can re-roll until you get a different symbol. And that happens like progressively. And
so that slows things way down.
Well, there's that, but then it also silos it into, it's like you have to have a minimum of three symbols at any given time. And so basically what you do is there's two symbols that do this, where it's like always reroll. One is for like defense, one is for offense. And you basically always choose those symbols because that like lowers the variance so that you're always getting the symbol that you want. One thing I should mention is like, if you get three symbols in a row, you get some sort of elevated mechanic of whatever the base mechanic is. So like if it's, for example, deals poison damage or something like that, and you get three in a row, it'll deal a lot more poison damage. And it's like, or it's like if you have some sort of rogue as in the D&D class like weapon, it'll do like a crit easier or something like that. So the idea is you want to get the variance as low as possible so that you can like trigger these crits. Like once you kind of like find the golden path or whatever, it's like you just do that every run and the game becomes less and less interesting. There's a lot of like cool ideas that they kind of do with swings, where it's like some of the attacks will trigger its own mini game, where it might be some sort of like meter like skill game, or it might be like something where there's like a target that like rotates around the like a reticle, and if you get it right you can get a critical hit, like that sort of thing, which is a cool idea, but then it doesn't really mesh well with like the slot experience where you have to slow down and like do all these side games just to get like a single like roll, whereas other things move a lot quickly.
Wasn't that a thing with slots where like people get into the flow state of pushing the button and then disruption to that is negative, even if the disruption is, oh, hey, jackpot?
I could talk a long time about slot psychology. I would have a long answer for that. But in short, I will say it's not as simple as that, I guess. It's not as black and white as like, yes, it is. No, it's not. But I want to use this as an example of like, it's a cool idea for a game. Didn't really stick the landing, I think. I think they should kind of go back and try and do some things design-wise, because like it's a little bit muddied, where it's like symbols that you think that they might think are overpowered are not, and like actually are kind of bad and you don't want to use them. And then some things which are kind of unassuming are like the OP, and it's easy to break in that sense. So in that sense, it's like, yeah, and it needs more like progression system. So it's like it's almost like too small of a game. But it's a good scaffolding for it. So kind of middling review on this, but I wanted to segue this into a related game where I went and played this after seeing the Indie Game Awards. There's a game called Ball Cross Pit or Ball X Pit.
Breakout Survivors game.
That's a great way to describe it. I think I had described it as a puzzle bobble shooter game, which is probably a less good way to describe it. This got awarded for, I think, rewarded or recognized for good design in indie games for the Indie Game Awards. This is a roguelike. This is like this, a similar sort of thing that I was looking for, but essentially it toggles between two different, mechanics. There's the main game, which is where you go on runs it looks like a puzzle bobble sort of thing, or where you're just shooting balls. You just control the direction and you're going down like a long alley. And so it bounces off the sides, will hit enemies. If enemies are slowly progressing downward, if they reach the back line, they'll just straight up attack you. And then you'll take damage. You have a health meter. If you die, then the run's over. A run on a given course is kind of divided in thirds, where you have bosses at a third, two thirds, and at the end that are unique for the stage. So that's one mechanic to the game. And then the other mechanic is you're given this sort of like town area where you can build buildings on it. and you can shoot your characters into the town. And each time they bounce off of something, that you'll use that to construct buildings or to get some sort of resources. Like, for example, you can put down a field or a forest or stones. And if they hit those, they'll collect the resources as they bounce off of them. So it's like
weird.
Yeah.
You see, this is why America can't build anything nowadays. Not enough people are willing to shoot someone out of a cannon.
Not enough people are willing to run into it. Yeah. So it's this kind of weird, not sure how I feel about it minigame. It's fine enough. It does its job sort of thing. That's like one side of it. But the buildings that you build will basically either allow you to collect resources easier through this minigame, or they dip a little bit into some of the buildings will like passively collect resources, either in-game time or out-of-game time. But the ones that are more interesting are some of the buildings will unlock new abilities for the character that you're playing that'll be in the main game that you're doing, like the alley sort of game. And like one example is some of the buildings are homes for characters that you can unlock. So it'll unlock new characters that you can play on the ball run part. And so the different every character has a unique ability to them. So to give you an example, there's like a ninja type class where instead of the ball shooting from the bottom up, they shoot from the back row down.
Okay.
There's like a ghost class where the ball passes through people and damages them as they pass through, but then they won't bounce off the back wall or anything. So stuff like that. That's kind of where this game starts to shine with that. So as you're toggling between the two, you unlock new courses. If you need to beat a course like 1 to 3 times to unlock the next one, and you can progress that way. It progresses in difficulty, and then it also gives you better rewards as you go through this. But the part that really shines for this is one of the buildings that you can build about halfway through the game allows you to take 2 of the characters on a run. And so you get you get both abilities at the same time. And so it does a really excellent job of making all these interesting combinations of like, oh, okay, well, if I get the thing that passes through people and I get the thing that like magnifies like area of effect damage, then I can really stack and do this. One thing that I forgot to mention is like, yeah, you mentioned this was like Bubble Ball, like Survivors or,
Breakout and like Survivors. Breakout with, Vampire Survivors.
Yeah. Because this has the Vampire Survivors element of it, where as you kill people, you collect experience, you hit certain levels and you upgrade like the weapon that you have. And it's very similar to Vampire Survivors where, and this is another part where the game shines, where it's, you have a choice of things that you can pick. There's passives and actives more or less. The actives are like some sort of new ball that you're shooting and is bouncing around and like hurting people. And then the same sort of way of Vampire Survivors, you have to collect 3 of everything to get it fully upgraded. And then the fully upgraded things you can combine. And then there's 2 different types of combinations. There's like a table of like how things combine to make new weapons, which is somewhat involved, like as involved or more involved than Vampire Survivors. So an example I can think of off the top of my head is there's a light weapon and a dark weapon, and you can combine those into a light bulb that does some sort of weird area of effect damage.
Okay.
But that gets involved. And then on top of that, there's another option that you can have is instead of combining it to a new weapon, you can just cross 2 elevated things. So it's like, I'm just going to cross fire and ice and I'll get ice fire or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that
water, usually water.
Yeah.
And steam.
Yeah. And so that's like more of it's not like a new weapon, but it just does both effects at the same time in a single like ball. And so you have a limited number of space for your weapons. So you kind of are relying on this like cross function or combining function. So you free up new space to get more things to combine it and level up as you're going through the run. So this has a really addictive loop where it's a lot of like just one more run, a lot of like exploration and seeing like what sort of things can I combine and like what sort of new things can I do? And then how can I pair that with a character that I'm playing with to like maximize the effect and make it like as easy as possible? So it's a really well put together game. It's like pretty elegant with, it's not trying to do everything, but what it does really well. And there's kind of, okay.
It sounds like it does something that I kind of admire about games like this, which is like it takes one mechanic, in this case, a ball bouncing, and then and then just kind of explores every angle, like, what is everything we can do with this?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And as like a little carrot, the last two characters that you unlock, big time change how the game plays. So like dramatically shift the rules of the game. So it's worth playing to the end, at least to see like how that works. And then after that, your mileage may vary, but yeah. So I think that the attention for this is like more warranted. And this is like a really good example of how to have like this, like a lot of interesting, like interacting mechanics in a small game like this. So.
Mm-hmm. Does this have, once you beat it, does it have, I forget what it's called, but like
new game different, plus.
Yeah. Or like okay. curse levels or things like that.
It does have a
ascension
new game.
Levels.
Yeah, it has a new game plus. I haven't explored it. Yeah, at a certain point it'll prompt you. I think after you beat like the highest level thing, it'll prompt you and be like, "Hey, if you want to play new game plus, you can." I don't know if it has anything equivalent to like ascension level where you play it at like super hard difficulty. It does seem like it's mostly like there's no like permadeath sort of thing in this where you have to like restart. It's a roguelike, so it's like you eventually make the game easy enough that it, you know, you just beat it or not. Yeah.
Well, I mean, especially as a vampire, it's like, it's about building the engine that kind of makes the game play itself for you. This it doesn't seem like the kind of game where like new game plus ascension kind of things, like it doesn't seem to be a game about rigor, I guess, in a way that the kind of like higher, what is it? Dex or stakes in Balatro.
Yeah, exactly. It's more akin to Vampire Survivors than it is something like that. So, that's all I got.
Yeah. I'm glad one of us played that because it's something that is kind of like floated around as one of the more notable things to come out in the past year. Just in terms of games like roughly of that scale.
Ben was the one who took the risk of getting sucked into a black hole that eats hundreds and hundreds of hours of your life.
I trust Ben to walk away from that more than I do most people. So
yeah.
Oh, thanks, Kay. You're totally right. But I got to act indignant.
Totally. Yeah.
So how's Trackmania, Dennis?
They delayed the new season, so they're going to 4-month seasons instead of 3 months, and so there's no new tracks yet. Sad day. Mm-hmm. But apparently Bank Mode reset on the year, and everyone's in a kerfuffle about that because, you know, the whatever. Anyway, no Trackmania this week. Maybe next month.
Have they said like that? Have they said the reasoning for doing it? That seems like that would be a concerning sign if I was a fan of the game.
Yeah, they did, and I forget. It is not a permanent, we're going to 3 seasons a year instead of 4. I think it was they needed a month for some sort of changeover or whatever. So,
I could also see it being like, yeah, we needed to devote dev resources to whatever's going to come next kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where there's such an embarrassment of games to play right now that I saw like, okay, I don't have to jump on the new Trackmania season. Fine.
Yes.
I got, you know, that's great.
Zero FOMO mixed in with this. Yeah.
Yes. What I got FOMO pressured into trying over the holiday was a game called Liar's Bar. And I came to this game in the best possible way, about to head to bed at 11:45 at night, and all my board game buddies start pinging me on Discord. Dennis, you gotta get here, buy this game.
Buddies are furries?
Yeah.
I was gonna say, right? Is that the furry poker game? Like, yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
Apparently I'm the only one who hadn't heard of this then.
Yeah.
So this is like if Zootopia characters got involved in black market murder poker.
Okay.
It's the conventions of, you know, Texas Hold'em poker, it's liar's dice, it's all those kind of bluffing traditional card and dice games, wrapped into furries or at least, you know, Zootopia-esque characters.
Anthropomorphic animals, just to flatten any
This is good. This is
there's got to be a deer hunter joke in here somewhere, but
The deer characters are in at least a little bit of disadvantage with the Russian roulette.
Yeah, there's. There's that. But yeah, so all the games work about as you expect. You know, you are when you're playing Texas Hold'em, you are betting bullets. And if you lose, you have to load that many bullets into your revolver.
Oh, that's cool.
And then everyone, you know, whoever loses takes a turn pulling the trigger, and could be nothing, could be guaranteed death if you bet too aggressively.
Okay.
And the other games like Liar's Dice, you know, all have that bluffing element. In that, if you lose, you have to drink poison. And after your second bottle of poison, you die. And so it's interesting. They tried to, I guess, vary the different ways that you are putting yourself in danger. Mm-hmm. But really, all you need is the Russian roulette. Instead of betting, what you can do is call the bluff of the person that played immediately before you.
Okay.
And you can't call the bluff of someone earlier in the table. You're sitting, I think it's four people per table, which is really, really funny. Because when it's not your turn to call the bluff, you are dead certain that every single person is a lying piece of shit. And obviously,
but then when it comes down, yeah.
When it's your turn, you are you're Joe Rogan, the most credulous person in the world. You got five kings? That's amazing.
Wow. What are the odds?
So this game definitely shines in voice chat. We're just, you're cajoling each other, and using bravado or whatever. It helps that it's just all these dopey looking animals that you're looking at around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the cartoon slapstick of Porky Pig blowing his brains out. I know that's terrible, but there's just a lizard brain like, ah!
Yeah. So, it's slapstick. It bypasses the moral part of your brain.
Right.
The part of you that's concerned about the well-being of animals.
So what is the level of gore in this? Is this like, Sniper Elite or...
No, a little bit of blood spray if you shoot yourself and drop to the table. And what's honestly the most funny thing is, this is an early access game, so there's not much polish. And just the other characters around the table have absolutely zero reaction when the gun goes off. And I think that above anything else just adds to the absurdity of it. I mentioned they have like drinking poison and stuff. There's not like I said, that doesn't have the same effect. But Kay, you were trying to say something.
I can never keep track of who among my friends likes the deception games and who doesn't. Are you normally somebody who goes for those? Moxie, I know that you don't. I know neither Gary nor Gwen really like them. I'm half
Ben
guessing
is all about
Gwen.
It.
No, but Ben gave kind of like the half in, half out kind of thing. But I can't remember.
Yeah, that's because he's sharking you. That's because he's sharking you. Don't believe him. No.
Your behavior on the court in those has nothing to do with your behavior off of the court, is the thing.
I'll take my Among Us Duckstream victory and retire from there, I think.
So. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'm not that person anymore.
Lord forgive me.
Related to what, I forget whatever that game we played.
Called you a sock? Duckstream.
No, not the sock one. The one that was basically Among Us, but everyone has a gun.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's
Deceit. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
But I liked that a lot.
That was good. Yes. Was good. Take a page from that. If it comes down to just you and one other person left, can you just shoot them?
No, I wish. maybe that'll come up at some point, but yeah.
I know they're
not allowed as far as I'm aware.
I know in the Russian roulette, there's one mechanic that allows you to choose where you shoot your gun. You don't have to aim it at yourself, but I forget what it is.
Oh, yeah. That is, which one is that? I think it's a different mode than poker.
Okay.
Where we spent most of our time. I think it's like Liar's Deck or something like that. This one also, funnily, has a slot machine which is just you spin the slots. Everyone can see one bar of what you got, and you have to say how many hearts you have. So it's the four different suits are the potential things that come up. And then, you know, if you if you're caught, there's just a gun in the slot machine pointed at you. So not a lot of you know, gilding the lily on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was, again, I think I wound up staying up to like 1:30.
Oh wow.
Just laughing hysterically with everyone online. I have not played it since. but it just, it was on sale for half off. So it was literally $3.50.
Yeah. When, it's only $7 normally.
Yeah. Yeah. So like this was a good investment, and very, very fun. Caveat, I guess they're early access, although it looks like they're kind of at the end of their planned development. So I imagine it's just going to be releasing soon. Mm-hmm. All the characters have AI generated voices and there's no reason for them to like, literally just dev hop on a mic. Because the voices are not higher quality than what you would get of just me saying the first shit that came to mind into this microphone.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they went that route with it, but that's the only negative I have on it. It's a very good friend, or very good time, especially if you're playing with the right friends.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's a bummer. I mean, especially because like aesthetically, like, I don't know, I'm not too into the Anthro stuff just generally, like as an aesthetic for itself, but like the characters are well designed and stuff. Like there's lots of expression to them. So like to just biff it on the voice like that when the visual of them has so much personality.
Yeah.
Is weird. You would think you would want to play it up. Yeah.
Who knows? And again, I assume their intent is that the final version will have professional voice acting, but mm-hmm. you never know with these things.
No.
But like I said, $3.50 well spent with friends.
Cool.
Speaking of friends, Kay, you dropped Tactical Breach Wizards
into my
Steam library.
Yes.
And I got to play a little bit of that. This is going to start off a couple of games I want to talk about that had like surprised me with how good their writing is.
Okay.
So from Moxie's Dead Island 2, Tactical Breach Wizards, I have spent way more time in dialogue than I ever expected would happen in essentially what is an Into the Breach like. Mm-hmm. And have like laughed out loud multiple times just reading through everything. It is so well written.
There were plenty of times where it was cute, and I liked a lot of the characterization. I felt like there was way too much of it. Right? I felt like it got a little bit into its own patter, and also the character voices they were not written distinctly enough from each other. Everybody felt like they talked like the writer,
which had the Marvel shtick where everyone is doing the same quippiness. But yeah, I mean, just so fun. And at the concept level, the idea of wizards on a SWAT team / just being integrated into society as a traffic cop or whatever else is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like I said, on the scale of things, this felt way less XCOM, way more Into the Breach or Fights in Tight Spaces or one of those games where it's kind of a puzzle.
Yeah.
More overtly versus kind of a grand strategy thing.
Yeah, because your main guy is a time wizard, and yes. So like you're able to kind of like see outcomes before you commit to them, and then
he is ex Navy Seer.
Yep.
Yes. Just fantastic. Yeah. So he can see into the future, but only a couple of seconds, mm-hmm. Which allows you to kind of predict the turn. And you're trying to figure out how to spend your character's resources. It's interesting. It happens in turns, but your order of operations within each turn matters significantly because if you shoot someone first, then you can go stand in the square they were in.
Because it's about positioning like and Into the Breaches. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You've got to knock people out of windows.
Yeah, no. Yes. It is that same game. It's a Tom Francis game. So you're going to be knocking people out of windows.
The fact that defenestrations is a distinct stat that is shown at the end of every level mm-hmm. tells you a lot.
Yeah.
So when
you've made Gunpoint and Heat Signature, you're gonna keep going. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So yes, have been enjoying that. And again, I went in expecting the puzzle elements to be really cool, which they have been. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting to be enjoying the dialogue sections so much. So, yeah.
So this
good stuff
this
there.
Game is actually number one on my like what I would like to cosplay.
Hell yeah!
Who would you like to be? Would you like to be the main witch character?
That's tough. Witch or the Navy Seer are the designs I like. The character mm-hmm. I like is the necromedic. I just love the concept.
She's good. Yeah.
She and she. I can't heal you, but I can kill you and revive you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is excellent.
All of the character designs are really good. Even like the last character you get, spoiler, but his design is really good too. concept wise, they're really creative with it.
Yeah,
and another just really creative conceit is there's different character skins or outfits that you can unlock, but versus it being tied to experience or progress or anything like that, it's just confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need enough confidence to be able to pull this outfit off.
Yeah.
And I found that very endearing. So, mm-hmm. You're not wrong, Kay, that it gets a little, into its own banter extensively at a certain point. But just as a game we were playing and like seeing constant clever ideas, well executed in general, just clearly the developer having a ton of fun with it. It makes it impossible not to have fun with it yourself.
It doesn't repeat itself very much in terms of mechanics. Like every mm-hmm. battle has kind of like its own, or every stage kind of has its own conceit, and the individual like talent trees, like the unlocks that you're committing do change your characters in really meaningful ways. There's just always more of it. And it has one of the best final levels I've played in a game like this.
Okay. Yeah. Can't wait to be checking back in on it then.
Yeah.
Next game that has surprisingly good writing is actually my continued playing of Ace Combat 7.
Okay.
Nobody warned me at how funny the in-mission banter was going to be. Half the fun of fighter pilot games is like, enemy on your six, dodge left, Fox 2, blah, blah, blah. That really contributes to the atmosphere. But you get, at a certain point in the story, you get transferred to a new squadron and you're like TACCOM guy. Gets on the thing. He's like, hey, I'm going to be eating while we do this. Sorry. My head gets fuzzy if I'm not, on a full stomach here. And then proceeds to have every single thing be a food analogy.
Okay.
And it's like, you're trying to hit these fuel pods in the middle of a platform. He's like, so it's kind of like a hamburger where like the bun's on either side. You got to hit the meat in the middle.
Is this Brad Pitt's character from Ocean's 11?
Yeah, basically.
it's just going to be Brad Pitt, but he's always holding a comically large sandwich.
Yeah. I never see him, so I can't confirm, but spiritually, absolutely. He is always holding a sandwich.
Yeah.
And what's great is the most recent mission I played, it's these really cool, intense moments where you're giving close air support to a special forces team that's taken over the enemy airfield and getting the people on staff there to surrender, et cetera. And the entire time your TACCOM guy is talking about like delivering the pizza as the analogy for getting the special forces team to where they need to be.
Okay.
And the fighter fight, like your squadron mates are reacting to it realistically. Like, dude, fucking stop. Like, so I almost got shot out of the air just now. Like, can we stop talking about pizza?
Let's focus but up.
Yeah. But you get to the end and you're hearing the comms from the SWAT team as well. And, your mission successful. They've captured the base. They're like, all right, everyone surrender. Put your hands in the air. All prisoners of war will be treated in accordance with the UN guidelines. And we even brought pizza for you.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, of course. Yes, this makes
not
sense.
Not beating the anime allegations.
Yes. No, not at all. Mechanically, I think I've talked to death how fun that game is in VR. Mm-hmm. The writers are clearly having fun there as well.
Have you run into, because again, this isn't a game where the entire campaign was made for VR. Have you like mm-hmm. run into limitations of the mod that have been a real problem to like accommodate?
No, it's been surprisingly good. So you like, you inject the mod once you're in the level proper. So you the first, when you boot the game up, you're just looking at a menu in like a VR desktop. and you know, a flat VR desktop. And then once you load into the level, you know, pause, go click the button, and you're in.
Okay.
Then when you finish a mission and come back out to the menus, then they are in VR, but it's scaled to where like the important menu options are kind of a little too far up and to the left.
So you got to kind of peek out.
You're kind of like peeking. You're almost trying to like peek around the corner of your own VR goggles, which feels weird. I know there's a button in like the mod platform, the UEVR thing, that like converts it back to flat screen for a time. Mm-hmm. I just haven't bothered to go look it up because usually I'm playing one mission and then moving on with my life. So that is the only thing that hasn't felt just spot on. Again, a cockpit fighter game is made for VR. So that is the games with good writing that I've been enjoying.
Cool. I don't know that I have any questions about Ace Combat.
I want pizza now.
I mean, I pretty much always want pizza. but the problem is you can't have it no matter how much you want it.
We're adults now and that is patently not true.
Patently untrue, but also much more true.
Yeah,
other words, lies we need to tell ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. I've got one. This has not been a very video gamey break for me, for aforementioned reasons, but I did get on and stream a game, and I'm a little bit disappointed because I was only going to be able to stream one night, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to start something big. So I just gave people on Blue Sky a choice. I posted like, all right, my winter car just came out, the follow-up to my summer car. And I was like, do you want to see me like do my first couple hours in that, you know, and probably die horribly?
See me just throw it all away?
Yeah. Or do you want to see like a short horror thing? Like I found a short thing on the Steam, you know, new and noteworthy charts or whatever. And it only got one response because I put it up a little bit too close to the time. But like, yeah, no, do a short horror thing. I really wish that I did my winter car, because the short horror thing that I picked that was on the new and noteworthy is a game called Carnival Massacre.
Okay.
This is a classic style survival horror game. You are a young woman who goes to a closed down amusement park, looking to rescue your little sister who had gone missing there. And this is, you know, it says it right all over the marketing materials, like, yeah, drawing heavily from classic survival horror tropes. So it's hitting a bunch of the stuff, like, you know, limited inventory. It's not quite tank control. Yeah, no, I think it is tank controls, or it can be. But semi-fixed camera angles, has that, you know, low poly, you know, Honda PS1 kind of aesthetic to it. Like some of the music is just actionably soundalikes of music from other survival horror games. Like I recognized, like, this is just Promise from Silent Hill 2. I went into expecting like, okay, this is going to be like a nice little like lightweight, you know, kind of deal. The first like 40 minutes of it, no enemies. You are just picking up resources, and it was incredibly boring. And then they decided, how about all of the enemies? And how about also there is like a jester with knives for legs and arms who sometimes shows up when you go into a new area.
Kind of respect the game design of like, well, you better been picking up things the last 40 minutes, because now it's this time.
You only have 8 inventory slots, and so much of the stuff takes up to like 2 slots. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just really frustrating, and not like it didn't have like the fit and finish of something. It didn't have the fit and finish of something that I expected to, even as a modest product, sit down and, you know, play and dedicate the time to. Just an awful lot of dying for reasons that I oughtn't have, it felt like, you know, and an awful lot of scenarios that felt just kind of designed to trap you.
It's funny.
There's too many people. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's funny juxtaposing this against My Winter Car, where it's like design difficulty versus unintentional difficulty in games. And
yeah,
very much changing your enjoyment of it.
Yes. Yeah. And something that is just kind of like a real bummer about this is like, okay, it is very consciously drawing from all these tropes. It can be a remix. It can be a pastiche. That is working from a certain baseline that you expect those parts to cohere and like turn into a game that you can meet on those terms as that kind of game, because the different ends of this didn't meet. Like, I didn't trust it at all to like let me get out of situations that I should have been able to get out of, or I don't know. It just didn't feel satisfying. That, and it looks almost exactly like and has almost exactly the same interface as another retro style survival horror game that I streamed last year called Alyssa. But it is not made by the same person. Different people. It just happens to have almost exactly the same interface to the point where everybody who came in was asking, wait, is this by the French robot game person? No, they just copied them.
Dang. Yeah. There's too many people in this space doing stuff on a similar scale without the jank to kind of force yourself to get all the way through something like this.
We're reaching the indie slop stage of game development.
Oh no.
We've been there for a while with a lot of this. Like at a certain point, like you kind of find what the new Flashlight House is for survival horror games, and some of it's like it's stuff like this. You know, like saying that because it's a small team, obviously very plucky, but et cetera, et cetera. But I've got to grade what's on the plate, you know, and not a predictable or reliably designed game in a genre where I expect it to be those things, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I have to share because I'm looking at the Steam page for it and I scrolled down far enough that I got the more like this window. And this check down is wild. So first, Resident Evil 4. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Silent Hill F. Well, okay, big name, but yeah, no, totally. Yeah. So same genre. The Uncharted Collection. The Last of Us.
Now we're just saying anything. Yeah.
Yeah. No, next, Star Wars Outlaws. Yep, okay. It got off the rails real fast.
Yeah.
They are all games where someone gets shot?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, I decided to cut bait on that one. I've had really bad luck recently with hex screen games.
Go play Silent Hill 3 again.
I guess. Maybe I should do like a classic one just to feel something that is not frustration at these things. Yeah.
Doing the Lord's work.
And also, like, if you're going to make a game that's like a throwback, we're taking all the tropes set in an amusement park. Like, I don't know, give Crow Country some space, I think.
Yeah.
Unless you're very specifically going for like an Illbleed style thing, and this is nowhere near as adventurous as Illbleed.
So, I was about to say that Illbleed is actually my recommendation for what I'd love to see on Hexcrank.
Yeah. No. I just the only reason I haven't done it is because it is. Also unpredictable and harsh in a way that I'm not sure would be very fun to stream because I've not actually beaten it and I don't know how to compensate for that. Right. For all that stuff. Yeah. So,
but yeah, I think, is this the one that this one even kind of looks a little bit like Crow Country? Or no, looks like that the game with the dolls, actually.
Yeah, see, Alyssa, that game that I said it stole the interface from. Everybody just kept on coming in the chat and saying, "Wait, is this from the French game, the really French robot doll game?"
Yes.
It's like every 10 minutes, somebody would come in and ask that exact same question. Yeah,
but so that's, put it in the corner at some point. Not Alyssa.
Yeah, they put it up as a Chiron. Yeah, but then I forget to take it down. So, yeah.
Isn't Chiron the guy that guards the River Styx or something?
That's Charon. Yeah, I always say Charon because, you know, That's just what they said in school. That's all that I've got is Carnival Massacre. I don't recommend playing it.
Thank you for turning that into entertainment, even if it was not entertainment for you.
That's what I do. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, we're in a new year, but we're going to do reverse resolutions. So far from what you are going to change, what is something that you are absolutely going to keep the same, either for yourself or in games in general for this next year?
Yeah. We have in the Slack Case, who I'll just read it. We can decide if they read the prompt thoroughly. I'm almost exclusively going to end up paring down my backlog. This isn't to say that I'm not going to get any new releases this year, but I'm confident that 99% of the games I play this year didn't come out this year.
It could be the same.
It could be.
I know from my backlog, I would definitely be able to sink multiple years into it. So
yes. Oh yeah. No, I could not buy a game. I could not buy a game for the rest of my life and still be set for games for the rest of my life. Well, but that would involve playing a lot of games I'm not interested in playing to the end. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, do you think what percentage of the games you play most years didn't come out that year?
Oh, I mean, 90% of them.
Mm-hmm. The only reason I'd say like it might be lower than that would just be because you play a fair amount of indie horror games that came out.
Yeah.
You know, new, but yeah, no, probably right.
Yeah.
No, all indie horror games have been in development since 2005.
Yes.
Oh, well, I mean, that's true. Yeah.
Ben, what does Lucy say?
Lucy says, gonna keep playing Granblue Fantasy versus Rising. I don't know if that's the title of a game that I've heard of, but that sounds cool. Also, Magic.
She just really enjoys playing it versus Rising.
Granblue Fantasy versus Rising.
It's a maximalist 2D fighting game. That's what it is.
Yeah, very anime inspired.
I was trying to parse whether Granblue Fantasy was fighting Rising or if it was the versus part was anyway.
Yeah, I think Rising is modifying versus. So Granblue Fantasy versus Rising.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, Magic the Gathering. In parentheses, we're coming for you, Moxie.
is the queer blob trying to assimilate Moxie into a Magic the Gathering habit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Into a polycube.
Okay. All right. That's good.
The DC collective. We're gonna try to find some time to do Magic the Gathering.
Oh, cool!
Amazing.
Nice. Yeah. I believe that Lucy will continue doing that. If I was to guess what hers would be, because I'll wake up in the morning and she'll be posting on Blue Sky just about like always some new gacha game that I'm not aware of, and like it could just be an extended bit where she's just making them up and I will never know. Moxie, what does Jala say?
Jala says, I will not beat Baldur's Gate 3 this year either.
Yeah,
fair.
First, hi Jala. Second,
hi Jala.
I mean, that's sad, but I believe you. you can determine that.
To be fair, I've never beaten it either. I've only gotten to the final boss and then watched the cutscenes. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is this game just like, you're just like fighting Mind Flayers, right?
There's a bunch of different stuff that you're doing, but Mind Flayers are always the kind of the key thing. Yes.
It is the Nazis from the 90s as the video game enemy.
It's always the Mind Flayers. Jala's like in Act 2 as well, which means she's like less than halfway through the game. Really? Yeah.
I got to the beginning of Act 3 and just the sheer like weight of like, oh, this is when everything's going to start coming home to roost.
Mm-hmm.
Intimidated me out of continuing until I forgot what was going on with all my characters, and now it feels too scary to go back to.
Oh, yeah.
So I would probably want to just start from the scratch, but no, I'm invested. And
so
I understand this version of things.
No, but also like so many people's experience of Baldur's Gate 3 is just Act 1 over and over again.
Is
what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would stand alone on its own.
Oh, it's huge.
And clearly does.
Hearing people's stories about Act 3, it's like completely different games. It's like, oh, that was your party? I didn't have any of those characters.
No, I never found Minthara. Oh, she was just a boss. Like, I totally knocked her into a pit. I didn't get her gear or anything.
Hey.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael promises, I will continue to buy games on sale. I will never play.
That's the free space at the center of the bingo card. But
I got off that hamster wheel for a brief time via Game Pass, but now that Game Pass sucks and I'm off that, I'm back to buying games I'll never play. So I'm taking solace in the lie I tell myself that the drip feed of games I buy is staying below what I would be spending, but even with the price increase, I don't know if that's true. We'll see.
There are other benefits to not being on Game Pass.
Definitely.
Oh gosh. And I'll round us out with Robinson, who says, I will listen to podcasts as I play games instead of taking in the atmosphere. You and me both, buddy.
It has an outsized impact on what games I play, what podcast, or whether or not I feel like listening to a podcast.
Yeah. If I'm in the mood to focus on something that is not the game plus the podcast, which is somehow more work than just focusing on the game. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, just focusing on the game is more work than focusing on the game and the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I think that's what I heard.
Yeah. I'm going to go with an old standby. I'm going to say I'm just going to continue not playing enough games for myself. It's mostly going to be assignment and stream stuff, and that's just going to have to be okay. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to continue to play new games by John Blow that come out despite not liking the artist.
Despite John Blow's best efforts.
He's been doing,
I feel like that has been like every personality in game development this year. Like what the EA boss did something, the Borderlands dude.
Yeah.
Splitgate.
I watched a lot of videos after the announcement of his game, or like the interviews that he did. And he's like, he's remarkably more tame on interviews than he is on his Twitch stream, where he'll have more incel talking points kind of out loud.
Yeah. But anyway. Well, people will read the interview that he does. You know, if it's just multi-hour Twitch streams and he says stuff, like you have to, he can say whatever it is.
Yeah.
He gets in trouble if people clip it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Moxie, how about you?
Man, this is a tough one. I'm feeling like maybe going with the easy way out and like I will continue to play Warframe.
Sunrises.
Yeah,
I will probably play Dead Island 3 because I can't help myself.
Is that coming out this year?
It's either this year or early next year. I forget which.
Yeah, well. Okay.
Assuming it doesn't do like Dead Rising 2, in which case, it'll be in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, finish this up.
Yeah, I will continue my slow decline into buying way too much gear for all the various sim racing and VR and whatever other peripherals that are presented to me.
You haven't gone crazy with the sim racing stuff since you did the initial buy of the...
But I haven't told you about my Christmas present.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I'm gonna try to get it up on the camera
now.
Yeah. Which this is going to be terrible for podcasting, but let's see if I can get it on camera. I wanted a racing chair that like lined up proportionally with the cars.
Uh-huh.
And Jen got that for me.
Oh.
But also got it embroidered with a custom logo that the kids designed.
Oh, nice. Furia Motor Company.
It says Furia Track Attack.
Nice.
Nice.
That's cute. That is impossibly cute.
Yes. Yeah,
that is.
So what I will not attempt to lift up on the screen is the base that again is woodworked for it. That actually like lets me adjust it and then line it up right and all that stuff. But I have like a wood paneled cozy rig now.
Nice.
But between, like, between my pedals and the chair now, it is, but I'm like, driving a station wagon.
But that was a gift. That was like that's like
that is fair.
Like a thing to like what else is there unless you want to go even crazier with a wheel, right? Like,
don't threaten me with a good time.
No, I'm not threatening you with a good time. I'm just saying you have a wheel that's sufficient.
Like, birthdays around the corner.
Way less and less every day.
I know there's the tracking thing, so like you can look and the camera will pan and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you're playing on flat, there's. Don't the question of what else could you buy always has
right.
an answer.
You have not demonstrated a lack of impulse control when it has come to that so far. So if this is the year you decide to go crazy, I will be surprised.
Okay, good. I've got you all fooled.
When you come into town though, we'll have to check out. There's actually a sim racing arcade here.
Oh, cool.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. Cool.
Cool. Well, thank you everybody for answering the question. This was fun. Good question, Dennis. If you want to participate in this in the future, follow us on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social and watch for those prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Ben, since this is a lingering game of the year thing, I will let you go first.
So this happened in December. The Indie Game Awards came out and gave all their game awards. This was like after the Video Game Awards, so not to be confused with the Jeff Keighley thing. But within a day after the winners were announced, Claire Obscure was disqualified from all of its awards that it received because it came out that they had used some generative AI in the game development process. And apparently the Indie Game Awards has a very strict policy against doing this. Mm-hmm. So because of that, things like Game of the Year went to, I believe I'm reading this right, even though I'm not reading the article, it went to Blue Prints. So Blue Prints was in second place. And
okay. Oh, nice.
Moved to that. I was excited about that because that was like my Game of the Year. So very biasedly, I was happy about this. Sorry to the Claire Obscure fans. It's still a
great
game.
Claire Obscure is not an indie game, though.
Okay, so you literally just walked into the longest thread in forums history, locked by moderator. I'm doing a slow tackle to like no.
Oh my word!
Yeah, yeah. Just nothing but discourse about that since the nominees were announced.
Yeah.
Did you do that intentionally? Or you do?
No, my bad.
Okay, all right. It's like you're trying.
makes it even more pure. Yeah. Can I have a bit of an obscure beef with the way this article is titled?
As long as it's clear.
I know, but you can have an obscure brief beef.
I know clickbait got a clickbait and whatever, but the title is Claire Obscure officially loses GOTY. New winner is an underrated gem. Like, say the name of the freaking game that we want people to pay attention
put
to.
It, like, put it in here.
We all know what asshole. Yeah. So
it's one of those things too. So where dumb. And people I know who have played Blue Prints love Blue Prints. So it's not like anyone who plays it, I don't think it's underrated, but
No.
Just that they like
hide the name
obscure
of it.
Is front and center here.
Yeah.
You won't believe who's strangling you right now. I guess I've got to click this article.
Okay, back to the actual topic, which is blueprints getting some much deserved love.
It's just one of those things where, you know, the Silksong people were kind of jerks about it, but it's like, yeah, no, Clair Obscur was obviously gonna, you know, sweep a bunch of this stuff. So it's neat to see some place that it didn't.
Yeah.
Also, you know, this is not, yeah, it is nice to see the Indie Game Awards for as much stock as I put in any game award kind of thing, blah, 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 sticking to their guns on that.
Do we hate Clair Obscur now? Like
I don't.
It genuinely was refreshing and cool and like it great. It just did not need to have the indie stamp on it. Like,
yeah.
still, I think, can be great.
Yeah,
I would like to suggest that when I go to Wikipedia and read the Clair Obscur entry, oh no, I'm sorry. I was looking at the developer. I was gonna say the if we make the rule for what is an indie game, the developer must not have a Wikipedia article, then technically both of them are.
Yeah. Oh, so many indie developers have a Wikipedia article because they released a game that people care about.
I'm joking.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we hate Clair Obscur. Like, you can be disappointed in them using AI interstitially. You know, I don't think that that's inevitable the way that some people say. Like, I don't think it should be, like, excused. You can draw your own line with it. But, like, I don't think anybody's taking away from the, you know, from, like, oh, the final product. It's just, you probably didn't need to use that AI. You probably should have disclosed it. You didn't need to do the oral. Yeah.
I think maybe some of the backlash might be coming from the fact that, like, it's a good game, but it doesn't deserve 100% of the awards for the games that came out this year. And it kind of got that. So I think that might be where some of the pushback comes, but it's still a good game.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see here. Dennis, what's going on with Helldivers?
Yeah. So I haven't dipped into Helldivers 2 in a minute, but apparently in the latest update, they have reduced the file size for the game by some 80%. Which is just incredible. When Helldivers 2 released, that was kind of the big gripe. It was like, oh, cool, really, really amazing game. Did we need 150 gigabytes? That seems excessive. Mm-hmm. So they actually did an in-depth analysis of it, and I am not smart enough to really understand what's going on here, but apparently a whole bunch of the file size in the game was dedicated to getting it to run smoothly on optical drives, knowing that, like, hey,
it was going
to
be a console thing, so it wasn't optimized for solid state or even HDD.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if this is going to be right off a disk, we need to do it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so they basically have finally gone for PC and removed that fat, and it's now down to a svelte 20 gigabytes versus its original.
So what I'm hearing is consoles are the problem again.
Probably, yeah.
at least
designing exclusively for them.
It's a conspiracy theory. I will admit to that. But I have to think that for certain large marquee titles, I'm thinking of Battlefield, of Call of Duty, like any of those, that they're intentionally not paring down the file size because they want, on a 512 gigabyte or 1 terabyte console, they want to dominate all of the space so you can't install and try something else.
Okay, take the tinfoil hat off.
I've got headphones on. There's no tinfoil anywhere here.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I think it also, just like when you are a giant company, your frame of reference becomes top end machines and unlimited storage. And so you just can't be arsed to design for something less than that.
I think another part of it too is, like, when you are a big enough company, you rely on a lot of tooling, like the Unreal Engine and stuff like that. And so with that comes like a lot of bloat, where it's like nobody's really paring down the size or anything like that. People are just, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is so funny that just 100 gigabytes of that was just wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, I mean, I gotta say kudos to them for going back and doing that.
Two years too late.
I don't know how many people are going to be like, oh, now I will buy and play this. So this just feels like them maybe finally getting to something that was on their checklist for a while and just a little further down than anyone would like.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I really should poke my head back into Helldivers 2 and see what's going on, because they seem to do, adding cool new things to the game really well.
Mm-hmm. They've continued having support for it.
Yeah. And now I don't have to clear space on my hard drive to do so.
Yeah. Good. You can install other games now. Finally. I'll do mine. So, Moxie, earlier you mentioned the Splitgate CEO making an ass of himself, or that company's CEO, the developer. For people who don't know, Splitgate is the multiplayer shooter that's kind of like Halo with portals, I think, is the kind of the remit of this. Dennis, you've played it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and genuinely one of the best feeling arena shooters I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a really good game. It is just more the victim of Nepo Baby can't shut the fuck up than I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no. If I worked for this developer, I would be pissed. So the guy who runs the place, he's the one who came out, I think it was like Summer Games event, whatever. Yeah. Jeff Keighley's thing. In a make first person shooters great again hat, and people said, hey, maybe that's a little bit unseemly. He doubled down and et cetera, blah blah blah. It's like, real tone deaf kind of stuff. Whatever.
Before doing the Sydney Sweeney of, now that this is affecting my bottom line, I see how I might have been wrong.
Yes. Yeah. So he apologized for it right in time to try and make people play the 1.0. It launched, had a really underwhelming reception. They made some changes that I think also pissed a lot of people off, if I'm remembering this correctly. Yes. And they just recently relaunched it under a new title. I forget what it's called. It's like Splitgate Arena, free to play.
Arena Reloaded.
Arena Reloaded. Okay. People kind of noticed, by looking at the Steam concurrent players, that it didn't even break like 1,000 concurrent players at a particular time. Now, I will cede. Looking at concurrent players on Steam, not necessarily a great way to measure success in kind of like every case, right? Games are not meant to be played all the, forever, all the time. Like there'll be a surge and then it'll go away, etc. I will say for an arena shooter that is multiplayer and relies on there being a player base, having a number of players that could all fit inside a large high school gymnasium might not be best for you. So
especially because one of the big changes they made as we're listening to audience feedback thing is like, hey, we're letting you have bespoke lobbies and we're letting you choose what modes you want. We're not going to like try to shepherd everyone into one mode. And so like it is a more fragmented game.
Mm-hmm.
Than it was before even. And I think that itself is not bad, because with a healthy player base, people want to be able to choose. That's good.
Yeah.
With 1,000 people, it's going to be real obvious. You've got 1,000 people.
Yeah. So the initial launch, had an all-time peak of like a little bit under 26,000. And this new one just isn't cutting it. The company, the developer, 1047 Games, put out a statement: Steam charts don't measure fun. They show one number on one platform at one given moment. Show me the PSN numbers. Show me the Microsoft numbers.
Yeah.
They don't show the full picture or what it feels like to actually play, and they definitely don't capture the community that is actively helping shape what Arena Reloaded is becoming. Also, that is not blood in my mouth. That is victory wine. Yeah.
So just so you can get another window into how it's going, I've got the game in my little bar of Steam games, and so the featured update right now, when I click on it, is update: recruit 2 friends, get the battle pass for free. oh baby.
Oof, each one teach one. Please, we're begging you. Uh-oh. I want to see a game be rewarded on the merits. And that's why this is, you know, like, just fuck that CEO. Don't make yourself the story. That, and also, like, maybe, I don't know what the market for arena shooters is right now. I imagine it's pretty rough with Battlefield and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know. It just, it seems like it's Jover, you know?
Yeah. Be aware of how much choice people have and don't give them a reason to dip out.
Yeah. Moxie, you've got two stories, so I will let you lead.
Yeah, so the first one, the People's Joker, which is kind of the inverse of the Leto Joker. It's a the Joker as a trans allegory. And you know, was an independent film that very famously performed very well in the Toronto Film Festival and then was shut down by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, they had to have seen that coming, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they took a lot of a lot of efforts. Ultimately, it got put out basically under the same parody law that, like, allowed Alec Robbins to publish Mr. Boop. The comics archives of those in print. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah, so it has been available on I don't have the name here right away, but on basically a streaming service that specializes in kind of bespoke, or not bespoke, but boutique movies, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. However, it's now finally going to be available on a more mainstream platform on the 21st of January. It's going to be streaming for free on Tubi.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just kind of a thing that exists that you might be interested in.
Yeah.
A second one of those is this is just some game that someone online made, but it's Spherical Snake, which is you are not playing a snake that is a sphere. You are playing Snake, the old arcade game where you're eating apples, except on a sphere. So,
oh,
you know, the thing you're on is, you know, non-Euclidean and, you know, wraps.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, quite Euclidean by,
Or, non-Cartesian, is that what I'm thinking?
Yeah. Maybe?
Spherical geometry is the thing. Is,
yeah.
You are steering not on a plane, you are steering on a curve.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so this is not snakes on a plane.
No, no. It is, in fact, not.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That's filled me with life. I really needed that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Sorry, I was busy, like, just making a note for the notes, like, so I can get the stories out. I missed it. That's good. That's really good. I want to give you your props on that.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is interesting, though, because it's a sphere, you never have to turn. I don't think this has any function other than you don't really need a pause button. As long as you are shorter than the circumference of the sphere, you just walk away and you're fine. So, you know, normally you got walls.
You know that you're nerd sniping Ben.
No,
right?
Well, I mean, in the game, you're obviously going to get bigger than the equator in the game. So,
yeah.
Now here's, can I put myself at an angle or like turn at an interval that will maximize how much of the sphere I rotate around so that it just automatically I will get to, you know, maximum length?
I don't know.
Probably not.
That's
probably want to turn.
But this is like a snake, but Super Mario Galaxy is the sense that I'm getting from playing this right now.
There's a thing in math called hairy ball theorem, where it's like, if you have a bunch of hair on a ball, you're going to have a bald spot. Look it up.
Okay.
What?
I'm sure, like, in context, that's...
It's an allegory for vectors, like in a field, and you're always going to have like a zero-pointed one. Anyway, I don't know. It seemed appropriate to now. I'll be quiet.
Yeah. Going back a story, The People's Joker is really good. I really enjoyed that. It's super sweet. And I am not like a DC fan, like so many of the references and stuff in it. I just had no idea. Check it out. And like, obviously it coming to Tubi is really great, but like it's been available to like buy on demand, like on like Apple TV and stuff, like other things. And it's not very expensive either. So I just wanted to throw in a recommendation because it was brought up. It was one of my favorite movies I saw last year.
Sweet. Now, is it like the screenshot that they share makes it look like a fairly low, fairly low production value?
So the creator, so the director, writer, and also the star who plays the lead character, Joker the Harlequin, Vera Drew, she was an editor. Not on like Tim and Eric Awesome Show Great Job, but for like stuff they did after that. So basically part of like the production crew for Tim and Eric stuff. And so like you don't want to call this outsider art because that I think takes away some of the intention from it. But it's very much like a lot of like green screen compositing, like mixed media kind of stuff to it. Oh. So yeah, it is low budget. But in a very charming and intentional way, I think.
Yeah, low budget is an artistic choice rather than just a necessity.
Well, I mean, yeah, rather than just, it also was a necessity.
But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Also, the Jared Leto Joker is in it. That's obviously not Jared Leto, but the very shitty boyfriend in it is the Jared Leto Joker. That's the person on the left.
That's amazing.
Yeah. All right, now, having Jared Leto actually come back and reprise his role would be really interesting.
I would not want Jared Leto around any human being, let alone these very nice people.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
If he's there exclusively to get shit on. No, he's still getting paid. Okay.
Yeah. No. Cool. Well, that's stories. How does everybody feel about? I'm so tired. How does everybody feel about buttoning up?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's button.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 570, the first of the new year. We hope that you had a fun and safe holiday and you're getting back up to speed. Okay. Let me see here. I don't think there's any special admin stuff right away. There will be some disruptions to the schedule coming up in February because of my move. So maybe going to miss like 2 weeks or so because of the way things are timing out. Just want to lay the track for that right now so nobody feels rug pulled or anything. Thank you. It always feels so like oily to say, I thank you in advance for your patience. like now you can't be impatient with me because I've already thanked you. Right.
we're doing a massive wetware upgrade that'll really increase the output of some of our key assets. So just bear with us as we make that changeover and Kay's about to kill me through the internet. So I'm going to shut up.
You done?
Yeah. It'll be funny when you're not tired.
I know what you're doing. I was about to say I left that role for a reason. I was laid off from that world for a very good reason. is there anything I'm forgetting? You know what to do. You can support us on Patreon, leave ratings or reviews, comments where you can, tell your friends, all of that. You've listened to podcasts before, so you know. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Dennis. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I have two. I have Pat and Tina. and I have Polycube.
Polycube.
Polycube was fun. Yeah.
Proud of that one.
Oh. Moxie, what do you have?
I just had one. I had Black Market Murder Poker.
Okay. Okay. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got a couple. I got Camelotkas. That's self-indulgent. I got Moxie.
How do you spell that?
Camelot and then Latkes. Good luck.
Okay.
And then Moxie said, that would be a concerning sign if I was a fan. And I thought that was really funny. So.
Okay.
Wait, and which was this? Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
The Trackmania release schedule. Yeah.
And then Snake's Not on a Plane is how I stylized it. So.
Snake's Not on a Plane is pretty good.
Yeah. Dennis, what do you have?
Yeah. So I had Puzzle Bobble Shooter Game. Which just made me think of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Okay.
And I had that game with the dolls.
All right.
That narrows it down so little.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, Polycube made the list as well.
Okay.
I love that we had a Bubble Bobble reference just to continue the tradition of
mixing up. Good.
Oh, I was going to say, we discuss Jala's favorite games whenever she's not on the episode.
Oh, no! Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the game we're thinking of is not Bubble Bobble, it's Puzzle Bobble or Bust a Move in America.
Oh, yeah.
I did look this up before the podcast. I do have Puzzle Bobble written on my notes. I would need to check the tape if I said it or not, but...
I feel like maybe you might have said it correctly, but afterwards, it may have just gotten mixed up.
Could have had a bubble.
You might have said it correctly, but nobody was listening to you. So
a bubble bobble blunder. So
too many bees.
No. That was its name in South America. No. Good times.
By votes, we have Polycube. Does anybody feel strongly?
I really like Snake's Not on a Plane, but that's just me.
Okay.
It might not translate well on a title because people might not get it, but that one made me the happiest. But
I need to, I don't know if we've done a Snakes on the Plane, a Snakes on a Plane one before.
I will recuse myself since those are both from moi.
How about this? I like it. I like Snakes Not on a Plane if we can stylize it with parentheses around not.
I like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that. Me. That feels good. It is decided.